The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Here we go. Okay. All right. So welcome back from lunch. So for this afternoon, continuing our reflections about sati, mindfulness, the first factor of awakening. It might be nice to start with a meditation again for us to arrive, and also to acknowledge and honor that it's post-lunch and we're sleepy maybe. This is usually the time that sleepiness arises. What I would like to do is actually invite us either to stand or to sit, because there are four postures for practice that are taught by the Buddha, and none of them is better or worse than the other, not to privilege one over the other. So standing is just as important as sitting or walking or lying down, except that lying down right now, probably if you are sleepy, you'll be enjoying a nice good nap. So with that, actually, I'd like to invite whoever wants to stand up with me, and we'll do a standing meditation together. Often not done, but if you want to continue sit, you're welcome too, but if you want to try on for size what the quality of standing meditation is, how it's just a little different from sitting, then this is a really good time. Check it out. Standing, feeling your feet on the ground. Okay, I'll just give in standing meditation because the sitting ones you already got. And you can either have your eyes closed if you feel comfortable with your balance, or you can have your eyes ever so gently open, just letting in a little bit of light, looking down the floor in front of you, maybe not too front so that your neck isn't bending, but just kind of like letting your neck be relaxed and your gaze just kind of falling softly on the floor. And if you do choose to have your eyes open, actually, it's important to not be looking, which is not looking out, kind of seeing, but letting the eyes, letting the gaze be really soft and gentle, kind of relax as if the eyes are relaxing in the back of the socket, and just receiving the light. Sense of receptivity, receiving the light source and colors, whatever it is, coming through. And letting the gaze be more inward, actually, if the eyes are open, let the gaze be inward. Gazing inward in the body. Feeling the feet on the floor, grounded, supported, stable. Maybe having your knees just bent a tiny bit so you're not locking your knees. There's a sense of ease and relaxation. Letting your shoulders be relaxed. Maybe a tiny bit rolled back so that you're not collapsing. Just paying attention to your body, maybe ever so slowly shifting your weight back just a tiny bit and forth just a tiny bit, just to get a sense of your balance. Maybe just a little to the right and a little to the left. Get a sense of this body standing from the inside and how you're stacking up vertebrae by vertebrae, how your abdomen supporting you being in a standing position. Now, similar to before, allowing your body to be relaxed and soft. It's really important for the body to be soft and relaxed. Noticing if there's any tightness. If there's any tightness present. Relaxing and softening. Doing the melting on your own. Maybe again starting from your forehead. Your eyes. Your face and jaw. Neck and shoulders, upper arms, lower arms, hands, melting, drooping. Your chest, upper back, lower back, abdomen. Sit bones, groin area, just all relaxing, softening. Upper legs, knees, lower legs, and feet. Can all be relaxed and alert and aware. These two qualities are not orthogonal. Being relaxed and aware, alert. In fact, being more relaxed better supports awareness and alertness, bringing a softness and gentle energetic quality to it. Experiment for yourself. Can you be relaxed as you're standing right now? Can the body be relaxed and soft? While at the same time you're alert, you're aware of what is arising inside. At any point during this meditation, you're welcome to sit if you wish, or stand up if you wish. Be your inner Dharma teacher, deciding what is best for you in any moment, for your body, for your mind. And if you feel sleepy, you can have your eyes just open a little bit. Or you can experiment with closing them if you wish. Again, experiment. Be a scientist of your own mind. Now, I'd like to invite you to explore, experiment with some of the aspects of what to be mindful of. There are a lot of objects to be mindful of. You will not be covering all of them. They're laid out in the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundations of mindfulness sutta. But we'll just touch in together into some of the foundations, well, actually all the foundations, but some of the topics within each foundation. The first foundation of mindfulness is the body. Being mindfulness of the body, being mindful of the body. One aspect of this contemplation is mindfulness of the posture of a body. Simply know whether you're sitting, standing, walking, lying down, or if you were doing an activity at this point, if you had been washing dishes or cleaning or anything else, simply awareness. A general awareness, diffuse awareness of the posture of the body, the position of the body, what the body is doing in general. This might lend itself well, this contemplation, to the mode we discussed this morning. Kind of the open, diffuse mode, as in the cowherder. That mode of mindfulness lends itself well to this particular contemplation and the various contemplations offered under the body section of Satipatthana Sutta. So I'm simply aware right now that this body is standing right now and breathing and also talking. I'm aware of all these right now. This is what's happening in this body right now. In this mode of contemplation, it's just simply enough to be aware you're standing and breathing. That's all. You're standing and breathing. That's all. Simply knowing without being entangled. Another contemplation having to do with the body in this section has to do with the four elements. It's called the four elements meditation. And without getting into a lot of detail, basically one way to explore this way, this object of mindfulness, is the sensations, the raw sensations of the body. For example, feeling the hardness under your feet, the hardness or the softness, the touch points, the raw sensations. Or the warmth or coolness anywhere in your body, but wherever for now it's easiest to detect it. Maybe your arms, armpits, feeling a warmth there. Or feeling of coolness. Maybe in your hands or your face, or at your nostrils. Just the raw sensations. Or the sensations of movement of the breath. Moving throughout the breath, throughout the body. As if you were describing the sensations, raw sensations, to immersion. Not thinking about it, but what does it really feel like from the inside? Or any sensations that call you in your body. Hardness, softness, pushing, supporting, warmth, coolness, hardness, heaviness, lightness. Whatever is easy to feel, wherever it's easy to feel. It also show up as tingling or tightness or spaciousness, ease in the body. There are more contemplations in this first foundation of mindfulness having to do with the body. But for interest of time, we'll move on to the second foundation of mindfulness. Other objects you can be aware of, you can be mindful of. You can be mindful of what's called vedana, the feeling tone, which is simply the label that the mind associates with an experience, either as pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant or nor unpleasant, shorthand, neutral. This is an important contemplation, otherwise it wouldn't deserve a whole foundation just to itself. It seems simple yet profound. Practice with this. Maybe open up to some sensation in your body right now that you were contemplating before. Maybe the bottom of your feet, armpits, hands, face, whatever it is. And allow yourself to notice whether it's feeling pleasant, unpleasant, or neither or neutral, let's just say. And then whatever else appears in your sphere of experience, be curious whether the mind is experiencing it in this moment as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Knowing that these labels are not inherent to the object, they're simply how the mind labels this particular object, this experience, in this moment. And they could change. Something that feels pleasant right now could start to feel unpleasant. It's the same object, a different vedana, or vice versa. Noticing that there's so many labelings of experience, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, throughout the field of experience, your body, your thoughts, sounds, emotions. Also notice how sometimes if there is an unpleasant Vedana, we get to focus on that, with the mind may get fixated on that instead of noticing so many other Vedanas, tones, affective tones throughout the body that are pleasant actually, or in the mind, or in the environment, internal, external, that are actually pleasant. How the mind might fixate on the unpleasant. Simply know that with sati, without getting entangled. Now let's move to the third foundation of mindfulness, other objects we can be aware of, mindful of. The third foundation has to do with the mind, mind states. Both wholesome and unwholesome mind states. Higher mind states. Simply, for this exercise, I invite you to notice if there's any calm present, any level of calm. Present in your mind state right now, any level of it. There might be a tiny bit. Might be diffuse. Notice now if there is any anger or ill will present in this mind state. Just checking, being aware, the absence or presence. Notice if your mind feels contracted or spacious. Notice if there is any unification of mind present. If the mind, there's any level of settling and stability present in the mind. Is it present or absent? Just simply notice. Now let's move on to the last of the four foundations of mindfulness, with just a few explorations there. The last one has to do with what's called dhammas, translated as mental phenomena or processes. The translation doesn't so much matter. Some of the contemplations there, some things you can be mindful of there, are the five hindrances, the four noble truths, the seven factors of awakening. It seems circular. So for today's contemplation, just as an example, we will explore the five hindrances just a little bit as an object of mindfulness. So the first hindrance . Notice in your mind if there is ill will present. Actually, I'm reversing the orders. Let's start with sensual desire, kamachanda. Kamachanda, sensual desire, wanting. If there's any sense of wanting present in the mind, that sati awareness can know. Know if it's present, okay, clearly seen. Know if it's absent. Ah, if it's absent, this can be a cause for arising of joy, by the way, in this practice, when any of the hindrances are absent. Oh, there is no strong sensual desire right now. How nice, how easy, how free. Let that be a cause for arising of joy. The second one, ill will. Notice if there is any ill will present. Vyapada. If it's present, any kind of ill will, just simply notice. Let it be known without being entangled, if possible. And if it's not present right now, there's a sense of openness and ease. Ah, let that be a source of joy and delight. There is no hindrance of ill will right now. And check in to see if the third one, sloth and torpor, tenamida, is present. Is there any sleepiness in the mind, in the body? If it is, it can become an object of sati, an object of mindfulness, to see it clearly, to be curious about it, to investigate what it's like to be sleepy. It's not a problem. It becomes the doorway, becomes the path. And if it's absent, if the mind is bright, no sleepiness, great, yay, absence of this hindrance. Similarly, the fourth hindrance, restlessness and remorse, uddaccha, kukuccha. Is there any restlessness and worry present? If so, with mindfulness, clearly seen. If not, the absence is also clearly seen. Ah, how nice that restlessness and worry is not present right now. And let that be a source of joy. And lastly, doubt, vichikicca. Is there any doubt, energy of doubt present? Doubting yourself, doubting the practice, energy of doubt just showing up and catching fire to anything around. If it's present, clearly see it. Ah, it's the doubting mind. And if it's not present in this moment, let that be clearly seen also, its absence. Another important reflection I'd like to bring in, which fits into the third foundation having to do with the mind, mind states, has to do with being aware of the mind's relationship to each contemplation, or to each object, rather. So, for example, if you are being mindful, if you're noticing with sati the sensations of the body or the breath, part of the first contemplation, there can also be awareness of the mind's relationship to the object. If there's anything that's coloring the mindfulness, is it the mind pushing, pulling, wanting, not wanting? What is the mind state? So not just the object, but the relationship to it. If there's anything that's coloring sati, so as you are, for example, sitting and noticing your breath, is this just being observed, known with mindfulness? Or is there a tension of wanting the awareness to be with it, or wanting the breath to be longer or shorter? As I ring the bell in a moment, I invite you to not only relate to the sound, be mindful of the sound, but also how your mind is relating to the knowing of the sound. The object is the sound. There is the knowing, that's the sati, the mindfulness. And then there can be a sati and mindfulness, a higher level, a metta knowing of the relationship of how the object is known, the relationship to the object. Here we go. So, there is a lot that we covered again, but kind of touched into. But the point, the purpose of what I wanted to have us explore a little bit is in the morning, we explore different modes of mindfulness. There are ways of being aware, sati. And this afternoon, what we've explored so far is the objects. There's so many things to be mindful of, not just how you're mindful, but what you're mindful of. There's a lot of different things to be mindful of, which would just kind of touch the surface a little bit with the four foundations of mindfulness sutta. If you're curious, you can look at that sutta more deeply. But for example, just with the fourth foundation, which is dhammas or mental objects, there are five contemplations in that. I think the question had come up earlier during the break. There is a contemplation of the five hindrances that we kind of went over a little bit. There is the five aggregates of experience. There is the six sense fears, seven awakening factors, four noble truths. So all of these things are jammed in there as things you can be mindful of, things you can contemplate. So we're not going to unpack all of that right now, but just to let you know, there's so many things to be mindful of in this practice, starting with the body, keeping it simple. Not to overwhelm you, but just to say there's a lot to be to contemplate, and yet starting simply just from the body, getting the bases covered. So I like to open it up to questions and comments right now, because there's a lot that might have arisen for you right now. So please, questions, comments. Yeah, Kristen.
So I'll just start with a comment, which is I'm glad that you are focusing on mindfulness of the body, because I have to say, like, over the last year or so, like, that's just been a game changer and it had been recommended to me. And but I always feel like maybe I'm not, like, as in touch with my body as I should be. Like, I don't feel a whole lot. Like, I feel a lot of tingling and just like the sensations of, yes, there's, you know, a leg there or whatever, but I, you know, and sometimes I feel like little pains in my back or something, or my foot falling asleep, but I don't feel anything else. Do other people?
Yeah. So what I hear you ask is, I mean, first thing you said, which I really appreciate, is that mindfulness of the body has been a game changer for you. Hooray! That is huge. Do you realize how big that is? Because when I really realized the importance of mindfulness of the body, you know, as I was saying earlier today, if you take nothing from any teachings, just take mindfulness of the body, kayagata sati. Just take that. That can get you very far. That contemplation alone is very powerful. And actually, any of these contemplations alone, it is said, can be the path all the way to awakening.
But I'm still waiting for that to happen. But
yeah. So, but I'm going to come back to your question in a moment. So I'm delighted that that's opening up for you. And then your question is, well, actually, is there more that needs to open up? I'm feeling, you know, my back a little bit and some pressure, tension, some tingling here and there. Is there more? So I'm going to turn the question back to you, Kristen, for you to explore, actually, to really explore. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. I don't know for you. So I appreciate that you're curious about it. One thing I would say as you explore is notice that with the mindfulness of the body, there are those two different modes that we talked about, or the three different modes even that we talked about. There is a diffuse mode of knowing there's a body, you're standing, sitting, what's happening generally, malaise or good feeling. And then there is a more precise, like, oh yeah, tingling here. Oh, it feels like this over there, feels like that over there. So both of those modes, and being able to move between the two of them.
Yeah, thank you. Because actually, as you say that, I realize there is more to that, because it wouldn't be a game changer if all I could feel is tingling in my feet. But I think And I don't know how otherwise I would know what was going on with me if I wasn't in touch with that. So I think there's like a little bit of that Vedana thing in there too about the quality of it and how I'm holding it.
Yeah. I think you already have the answer to your question. And I just invite you to continue to be curious. I think it's going to continue to open up for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What else? Is it the after lunch lull, or is it that you're all asleep, or you're just overwhelmed with all these contemplations that I just moved you through? Oh my goodness. First foundation, second foundation, third foundation. Okay, Dura.
I think a little bit of, I felt sleepy, kind of after lunch sleepy.
Yeah.
But I think besides that, contemplation beyond just focusing on my body always seems much more challenging to me because it causes me to think of something and then follow that thought straight.
Right.
So I've always found that challenging, I feel.
Right.
But especially if I'm tired.
I think
that when I'm sleepy, I'm much more likely to follow a trail of thoughts.
Right, of course. Yeah. So I appreciate what you're saying because I think that's so important to know where you are when you have energy, when you're tired, what is the appropriate both mode and what's the appropriate object. I mean, that's what I'm trying to get across here, you guys. Like, don't be overwhelmed with all the things I moved you through. There's a lot there. But just know that you can always choose what's the right mode for you. What's the right object for you at any time? And when in doubt, keep it simple. Mindfulness of the body. That's just go to mindfulness of the body, whichever mode is appropriate for you. And mindfulness of the body could be the just the body posture. Oh, this body's sitting and breathing. Just that. Or it could be, oh, this is what's feeling here, what's feeling there. Okay, more nuanced. But when in doubt, just go to that. If there's a little more stability, okay, if it's like, okay, it was cool, I got this thing, okay, what's next, or I'm ready, then I would suggest you go to the second one, second foundation, Vedana. It is powerful, extremely powerful. And that contemplation basically is noticing, as I said, it seems too simple. It seems way too simple, but it can also be life-changing, similar to mindfulness of the body, actually. Can be a game-changer. When you notice the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, that the mind just, you know, when I noticed that in my practice years ago, a couple of things came up for me. One was that I noticed the mind just labels things, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, all the time. It's just doing that and has nothing to do with the object itself. This piece of paper, in one moment it's like, oh, pleasant piece of paper. And then the next moment can feel unpleasant. There's nothing inherent about the paperness that makes it be labeled pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral in my mind. That for me actually showed up, and it's the easiest way I've seen it show up for other people too that I've worked with is through sounds. In fact, as I was just teaching a meditation retreat, for me it came up with sounds also, but I'll give you this fresh example. I was just teaching and this person shared this in the practice meeting. I asked them if it's okay for me to share it in general, and they said it's okay. So they were saying, you know, they were sitting in meditation on a retreat, you know, the hall, and noticing the sound by somebody sitting next to them being noisy. And they thought, oh, unpleasant noise, you know, kind of like when, who hasn't had that experience, right? Somebody's making noise and you're like getting agitated and irritated, like, stop, silence, you're unpleasant. So this person was noticing unpleasant, this sound, it just sounds, this kind of whatever they're doing sounds unpleasant. And then the contemplation that came up for them was like, wait a minute. Okay, this is a sound. How come when I hear the sound of the bird, that sounds pleasant to me, but this is unpleasant? So that curiosity led them to notice the Vedana. Oh, this is Vedana pleasant. Oh, that's unpleasant. And then in their contemplation, the way they did it was to say, oh, well, actually, I have metta for this person. I want this person to be happy. May they be happy. May their practice flourish. So, and then, whoop, that changed the sound, the Vedana of that sound, the feeling tone of the sound they were making from unpleasant to pleasant. You follow that? Right? The Vedana, the feeling tone of the sound of whatever, breathing, movement, whatever this person was making, switched from being unpleasant to, oh, pleasant. Oh, may you be happy, may you be safe, may you be well. So, noticing Vedana, there's so much that can open. I can do a whole day long on Vedana, which I'm not going to because we're doing mindfulness, we're doing sati. But just to say in terms of objects, mindfulness of the body, and then if you're curious, open up to feeling tone. See how the mind keeps labeling things as pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Incessantly, it just does that. You don't have control over it. You're not in charge. The mind just is going out and doing that, just labeling everything. And then we get kind of hooked to the unpleasant labels. Oh, it's awful. We don't even notice the pleasant. And sometimes when we notice the pleasant, we get totally hooked on it. We want more of that pleasant, darn it. Make the unpleasant go away. So it's just like you get to see all the mind games when you become tuned to sati for Vedana, to mindfulness of feeling tone. Great, two hands, shut up.
So wondering about any of this as an anchor. Ah. Like, is the body, are you talking about it in a way as an anchor or more just general?
Yeah. Tell me what you mean specifically so I understand you better.
So when I think of the way I've been working lately with an anchor, and it's generally the breath or the body. But staying maybe in one place with the breath, just noticing how it comes in, maybe into the belly, and just feeling it rise and, you know, go down, and just keeping my, I know you said you don't like the word focus, but awareness, let's say, there.
Yeah.
And that seems to get me into a really nice place when I have an anchor like that. Calms the mind, and I relate it to what Daryl was saying, where, you know, when bringing all these things in, and the mind can go, oh, let me look at that and look at that, and you know, instead of kind of the anchor seems to stabilize my mind,
right? Yeah. It does. Yeah. So what is the question that's arising?
You haven't mentioned, I don't think I've heard you mention the word anchor today, and I'm curious, when you're saying contemplating the body or the, I don't know, is it Vedna? Are you saying contemplating them as the anchor in a way?
Okay. Is that great? Or? That's a very good question. So let me tell you how this relates. So all of these, so there are lots, so there is actually, how do I get into it? Okay. So there is samatha and then there is vipassana. Okay, let's start there. So samatha, samadhi, is calming, stabilizing the mind. Vipassana is basically investigating phenomena, everything that arises. Okay, you need some stability of mind in order to investigate phenomena, right? Without stability, if you have a set of binoculars, and they're totally unstable, and they're going all over the place. There's no way you can look at anything, can you? No. Okay, so you need stability. Okay. That stability comes from calming the mind, unifying the mind. The word translated as concentration, which I don't like, but unifying, stabilizing the mind. You stabilize the mind in order to see clearly, okay? Now, how do we stabilize the mind? We stabilize the mind by saying, oh, come back, sweetie. Oh, okay. We keep bringing it back and calming it. We keep bringing it back to the same object. Hence the instructions to keep coming back to your anchor, to stabilize the mind, so that you can stabilize the mind. And then when the mind is stable, you can completely open up and say, okay, now you're trained. Okay, now you can go play around. And then when the puppy gets too excited, it's like, okay, Kitam, come back. Okay, calm down. Do you see that? So all these contemplations that I'm mentioning, you can in fact use them in different ways. If the mind has stability, they could be your anchor. If the mind has stability, of course you can notice all the Vedanas from here and there and everywhere. If the mind is really stable on all these objects. You know, earlier I mentioned serial monogamy. You stay with this Vedana. You're completely committed to it. Mind is not wandering. It's stuck. It's like, I see you, Vedana. Like, then the next Vedana for the foot, and then the thought, and then the Vedana, or anything. You just like, there's stability. But if there's no stability, it's like, whoa, okay, need to go back to the breath or the body. Just kind of, those are the typical anchors we use. You can also use sound as an anchor. People use sound as an anchor. Or with open awareness, people can use kind of a spacious awareness as an anchor, which is kind of a very loose anchor, but there's so many different ways to stabilize the mind. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not one recipe. This general teaching I'm telling you, which gets distilled as a particular instruction, simplified as a nugget. That said, bring your attention back to your breath. Keep bringing attention back. That's the whole idea behind it. But that's one instantiation of the general principle of calming the mind so that it can be applied. And if the mind is already calm and stable, then there is also another thing also to bring in, is that the mind can also get stabilized sometimes just by paying attention to different objects, actually. Sometimes it's more challenging, but it can happen. So it doesn't have to stay with one object, just the breath. That's the typical way. But it can also stabilize by moving around, but staying with the object. Does that make sense? Is that clear?
Yeah, I think it does. And then with these four, so when you were talking about the body, the feeling tone, and then what were the other two?
Mind states, and the last one is dhammas. Mm-hmm. Dhamma, dhammas, dhammas. That is translated as mental phenomena, mental processes, because as I read the long list, there's a lot of stuff in there, recipes. I think of it as kind of recipes in there. Yeah.
Would you say then each one of those holds samatha and vipassana?
Samadhi and vipassana.
So that each one holds a stability and a curiosity, space for both.
So I wouldn't say that they each hold it. It's a different relationship, right? It's not like samadhi and vipassana. It's slightly different relationships. So the way I would say it is that samadhi is the unification of the mind, is mind getting calm. Vipassana is the exploration of phenomena. Okay, so these are the different ways that different practices. I would say these are two different practices. Okay, So samatha and vipassana are practices, okay? The four foundations of mindfulness are objects to be mindful of. So you can apply, so you apply these two practices to stabilize your mind and to be able to pay attention to these objects.
Yeah.
Does that make sense
that's
now?
That's what I was saying. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Ah, okay. Took a lot of words, but that's what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Mitra, and then it'll come your way.
So just to kind of continue what we were saying.
Yeah.
So if I'm having a hard time staying with my breath.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's what I need to, samatha is what I need to, that practice is what I need to stay with.
Well, it depends. It really depends. So that's when the creativity that we're talking about earlier this morning, I think someone brought it up, you need to figure out what tool in your tool bag is needed at a given time, right? So suppose you're trying to cultivate stability of mind and then strong emotion comes up. You're really, really sad, okay? And at that point, and say, okay, sadness, okay, go away. I want to go back to my breath. That may work. It may not work. That at that point, you might turn to metta, to loving kindness, to compassion for yourself or to for someone else. Or you might turn to what's called mindfulness of emotions, to be mindful of your emotions in your body, let them move through, blah, blah, blah. Use R-A-I-N, which I hope you already know, but the way of working with emotions is an acronym. So just to say there would be lots of ways to work with, because it might be easy, or it might just, sometimes you might say, okay, drop it, come back. But there are a lot of different tools. It's not like, you see what I'm saying? That's where the creativity comes in. Okay, what do I do next? This is my goal. I want to build some stability, but how do I go about it? And then those tools become the path, because as you decide, okay, I'm really sad. I need loving kindness. That then becomes your practice. That becomes the path, because that's what is needed in that moment. You thought you needed to collect your mind, but guess what? What showed up to you was that actually no, you really need metta right now. And you don't resist it. You see what I'm saying? It's that flexibility. You need to have that.
So the other thing is, we were talking about maybe sleepiness after lunch. Or
Yeah.
I think I'm realizing when I'm not sleepy now, but when I'm, usually when I'm sleepy, or is my best chance of getting my mind settled enough to stay with something.
Ah.
Otherwise, I'll just be so anxious that there's no chance of getting anywhere. I'll be just jumping from thing to thing.
Interesting.
So I just realized that when I sit, I actually love the... If I can settle down and get not sleepy, but calm.
Then
I really feel like, okay, well, maybe I'm getting... hang of this.
Yeah. So what I'm appreciating, you kind of noticing the state of mind, that sometimes if your mind is already anxious, it's harder for you as you're still learning this, you know, getting your sea legs basically in this practice, and noticing, oh, actually when I'm a little more tired, just a little bit, like, oh, the mind has less energy, anxious energy. Oh, that's... So that can be where it keeps growing. Not to say you only then meditate or practice, but like, oh, this is how it feels. You learn how to negotiate it so that it starts expanding to when you are anxious and you can give space to the anxiousness and be with it just as it is. And like a wild ram, let it run around the pasture and not, like, it's okay, you can run around. I'm still here. Yep, there's plenty of space for you to run around. Yep, and at some point it'll be exhausted and it'll just come and sit at your feet.
Perfect, thank you.
You're welcome.
I was just thinking about the relationship between samadhi and vipassana,
yeah,
like you mentioned.
Right.
The meditation that we did today was, I mean, this afternoon was more like, to me anyway, was more like investigations. Because, you know, I happen to have back pain.
Yeah.
So when I focus on the body, and then we went to a feeling tone, I was like, oh, that's unpleasant. And then my mind was saying, I don't like that. What should I do? And, you know, go to Whole Foods and buy some, you know, it goes.
right.
Trying to fix the problem.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't really calming or, well, at least for me, it wasn't like what I usually do when I meditate. I don't go from the body to the feeling to the mind. Or
yeah, of course. And you're not supposed to. That was not... So what I... The meditation that I offered... So I'm happy that you're asking me this because I'm not saying do this series when you go home. That's not the idea. What I was trying to do was to introduce a range of topics for, you know, there is a mode of mindfulness, how we are mindful, and then there is the topic. What are you going to be mindful of? There are so many things to be mindful of, and they are all laid out in the Satipatthana Sutta. There were like really tens of, if you actually look at all the multiplications of things, it's like hundreds of things to be mindful of. I was just giving you a quick tour of these are some of the things to be mindful of. And of course it will make you more agitated because we're jumping from one topic to the next. Don't do that. You know? But it's like, oh, it's Tuesday, I'm in Milan. It's Thursday, I'm in Italy. I don't know, I'm in Rome. And it's Friday, I'm back to London. I mean, it's just like, that's what we were doing. It's like a quick tour of these are the objects of to be mindful of.
Okay.
That was the purpose.
So that was still samadhi, because you can be mindful
it's
of
not,
this fact.
Not samadhi. It wasn't samadhi. Okay. Samadhi is cultivation of stability when you keep coming back. And I wasn't encouraging you to cultivate stability. I was moving you pretty quickly between these objects.
Right. So it was more like, it wasn't vipassana either, right? It's just a...
So it depends on how vipassana is defined. So one classical definition of vipassana is seeing the three characteristics, anicca, dukkha, anatta, seeing impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self. We were not so much doing that, unless you think of the impermanence, like moving from one object to being impermanent, but not so much. I wasn't inviting you to, but it was just... an exercise in mindfulness, exercise in awareness. You can be aware of this object. Oh, look, you can be aware of this object too. And now there's this other thing to be aware of. There is breath, there is body, there is posture, there is five hindrances, there is mind states. Like, wow, there is... So what I wanted to leave you with was like, wow, there is so much to be aware of. There is a lot to be aware of. And I can choose at a given time what is appropriate for me to be aware of. I don't have to do them all, but what is appropriate right now to be aware of? There is a lot of choice. It's not just the breath. You see, okay. It's like I want to blow it open because as practitioners, you just get the simple instruction, just be with your breath, and you're just with your breath. Like, there is so much to be aware of, okay? And you can choose what's appropriate for you.
I got it. Okay. That was the exercise for.
That's exactly. It was kind of a graduate course. It was like this is what's available.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and take your time. This is what's like how should I put it? It's like it's the syllabus to the graduate course.
Right.
It's not the course itself. It's the kind of the syllabus. Like, wow, look at all these topics. There's so much. And many of them you've explored before in your practice. Of course you have.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put them together, it's like, oh yeah. All of this is available to be mindful of. Does that make sense now?
Yeah.
And again, not maybe I don't want to say as it's syllabus for a course, not a graduate course. Let's cross that out because it seems kind of advanced. It's not. It's just a syllable for a course that you've always been already been exploring in different ways. Mm-hmm. But just like when you put it together, you kind of get a sense of it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, another question. Amy.
So, sort of a comment on mindfulness of Vedana.
Yeah.
If you do want to do a day long on it, I would be happy to attend. I think it's very important. And in my experience more recently in my life, but also today, like there's just been, it feels like there's been more unpleasant Vedana arising in my experience. And yeah. Physically, as well as like just emotionally or mentally, and then just very quick reactions in my mind to that unpleasant Vedana. And I appreciate in your guided meditation that you ended with, what's your relationship to what you're noticing? What's your relationship to the object? Sometimes I forget that part. You specifically mentioned relationship to the body, so I explored just for a little bit relationship to Vedana, to unpleasant Vedana. And what I saw was that the mind kind of is afraid first, and then it pushes away, it like closes down around that unpleasant Vedana. And well, I don't know, that's just what I noticed. And it just feels like lately there's been not as much stability in my mind and just more reactivity to the unpleasantness of experience. And just and the things that you said were like really, it really spoke to my experience that like, you know, when there's unpleasant sensations in the body, it's like my mind just goes right there. It's hard for it to pull away and like just notice more areas of neutrality or pleasantness in the body. If anything you could speak to about like, I know like if I did more practice, I would probably be less reactive, but just a lot of like, just like really quick, like, reactions to stuff in my life right now. And
so I appreciate what you said, and one thing I would say is if Vedana is speaking to you, actually if Vedana is kind of being, is lighting up for you, noticing that, if that's the case, that could be the path to notice reactivity, because you start notice, you keep noticing Vedana like, okay, unpleasant, unpleasant, pleasant, unpleasant, 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 unpleasant. Wow, look at this poor mind. It's getting reactive to everything. That brings up compassion, it brings up ease. Then you also see it's not so personal. It's just like the mind is just doing that. But you need to bring mindfulness to that. To the unpleasant Vedana. That just being unpleasant, 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 unpleasant. So you have to, when you do that, you'll see for yourself. I mean, there have been times that I haven't felt well. I've been sick and my mind has been grumpy. And I've noticed that I've been sick because I wake up and my mind is labeling everything unpleasant, unpleasant, unpleasant. It's like, wait a minute, something is off here. Like, oh, I'm not feeling well. I'm sick. You see what I'm saying? Kind of like, you have to go through the seeing, the clarity of seeing the Vedana for what it is, unjudgmentally, unjudgmentally as possible, and seeing your reactivity unjudgmentally. Maybe actually that's where the place to start. Just see your reactivity. Just that, I think that's probably the first place to start. Just see the reactivity, reactivity number one, reactivity number two, reactivity number 87, reactivity number two. Just see that. Yes, that this is hard right now. Yeah. So, okay, tell you what, let's take like a 5-minute break and come back together for our last half hour together. Is that cool? Okay.